the public safety workshop. Singapore 52, Morrison Room, 1530.
Brad, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. I think we can start public safety workshop afternoon open session. My name is Kimmo Ulkuniemi. I'm from Interpol. And there's a small change in agenda, so we'll start with Benedict Addis from Shadow Server. Yeah, okay. And so, Benedict, are you ready?
I'm always ready.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. Has everybody got in? Rasmussen. there's always one. Right, folks. This was going to be a 20-minute slot. I can't compete with donuts, I'm afraid. Neither the registry, nor the delicious product. So, this was going to be a 20-minute slot with boring slides. I'm going to condense it to a 5-minute flash talk, but it means I need all of you to concentrate on what we're talking about. 30 seconds on me. I'm the former technical officer at the National Cybercrime Unit in the UK, and I was lead on something called Operation Tovar, which was part of the FBI's Operation Clean Slate, looking at taking down Game Over's use and CryptoLocker last year. Bobby, and have also previously worked with Bobby on the 2013 RAA here. I left law enforcement last year. I describe myself as a recovering law enforcement officer, and I'm now working for an organization that many of you will work with called Shadow Server. So Shadow Server do the public health bit that law enforcement doesn't like to do, which is taking all the leavings, all the IP addresses of the victims, and handing those out to countries, to organizations that have requested them. So we currently work with 75 national certs in 75 different countries. We're politically neutral. We don't choose who we work with. We work with everyone. We're unbiased, and we're non-profit. So we give the data to everyone for free if they ask for it. I'm not here to talk to you about Shadow Server. I'm here to talk to you about a new project called the Registrar of Last Resort. And this has come out of something that's been around, that's been knocking around ICANN for a few years, which is the public safety registrar idea that Dave Piscatello and Dave Conrad, among other people, have been talking about. And this is my theory is it's better to try to do one thing well than a whole bunch of stuff badly. So the point of the public safety registrar is to create a holding pen for bad domain names. So we're going to put all the bad domain names that people give us into one place and hold them there for as long as they need to be held for.
Benedict, can you define what a bad domain name is?
Thank you, Carlos. So we're being very clear on bad domain names. We are not interested in touching content. We're not going to be dealing with child abuse images. We're not going to be dealing with IP, intellectual property, or trademark infringement. We're purely, the initial remit is to purely talk about malware command and control, spam, phishing, APT, and botnets. So domain names that are 100% bad. But I need to be very clear, the registrar is only a holding instrument. We are relying on the people in this room to bring them to us and to report them to us. What we can do in return is we can be one place that you can talk to rather than dozens or hundreds of registries, registrars that may not be within your jurisdiction. So I know that under Clean Slate, under Tovar, we had three different legal jurisdictions to deal with. That was UK, Russia, and the US, which was, as many of you will know, kind of challenging. We had seven different registries to deal with, and also 20 different ISPs that Bobby's colleagues in the FBI had to subpoena, had to deliver court orders to in order to get them to act. So our proposal to you guys is that instead of having to deal with all of that, and I know that it's when you're running an active investigation that having to also juggle court orders, warrants, and subpoenas to a number of different registries and coordinate and make sure that OPSEC is maintained at the same time is pretty tricky. So we're going to take that pain off you is the first offer. The second offer is we will negotiate on your behalf. There is some precedence for when we've met a particular level of threshold of badness, and we'll talk, and I'll talk a little bit about how we're going to define that later on, for registries to waive their fees. I know, and if it can stay in this room, please, I know that we spent, in the UK, we spent $30,000 buying 2 weeks' worth of domain names for from .ru in support of Operation Tovar. We just bought all the possible domain names that botnet could use for 2 weeks. That's not something we can repeat. That's not something my bosses will allow me to repeat. And frankly, the last batch of domain names went on my personal card, and 9 months later, I still haven't got the expenses reimbursed. So I'm kind of keen to get on for this not to happen again. So we'll do those two things. The corollary is that we're going to ask for transparency, and we're going to ask for a certain minimum standard to be maintained. So we're not going to be dealing with intellectual property cases. We're not going to be dealing with low level cases. And there will be an independent committee made up of members of the community assessing what type of domain names will be acceptable to this registrar. But that's not going to be our job operating this registrar. We're going to ask the community to come and help us to do that. So the current situation is that we are going through the ICANN accreditation process at the moment, and I'm also meeting with registries while I'm here to negotiate the fee waiver aspect. ICANN have already indicated provisionally that they will waive their fees under the malicious domain program that exists. So I think I've talked enough, and I'm getting a kick from my colleague whose time I'm eating into here. But I'd really like if anybody's interested in putting a question in, I can see Mark's already got his hand up. I'd be really interested to take your questions on this.
Can you wait just a second? I'm sorry, I'm going to bring the microphone to you so that those that are remote can hear.
Or you could repeat the question.
Yeah, I was going to do that.
So if there's a bad domain used for phishing, for example, currently registered with some commercial registrar, how is it going to be transferred over to you? Will that be a voluntary action on the part of the current registrar? And if it's past the 5-day waiting period, they've already paid the fees. Yeah. And will they get a refund of the fees, or how do you anticipate that will work?
Well, for starters, we're not looking for any exceptions under ICANN rules. So, as you're well aware, after 5 days and up to 90 days, it's not actually possible to transfer that. If it's a GTLD domain, it's not possible to transfer it within ICANN policy. So for those cases, we will need a court order. Court orders trump policy, so we'll need a court order directed to the sponsoring registrar in order to move that domain. The case I thought, Mark, that you're going to ask about is what happens if that domain's not entirely bad, and this is again, you understand that case. Does that make sense?
I want to add something to what Benedict said, not speaking for him, but as general knowledge. Registrars can do as far as their registration agreements allow them. So if their terms of service allow them to cancel their registrations or transfer them to a different registrant, then that would be a scenario that registrars could use for these matters.
So in that case, I'll finish my flash talk by simply saying we are looking for test cases now. Whilst we're going through ICANN accreditation ourselves, we already have the ability to sinkhole and take domain names for any case, small or large. If you're having pain, and I know a lot of colleagues in this room have spoken to me privately that they are having issues in this area, just coping with the different jurisdictions, come to us. My email address is up on the screen. I'd be delighted if you drop me a line and we can meet this week. I'm here until certainly Thursday evening, and we'd be happy to help and consult on your case. Remember, this is a non-profit entity. We are doing this for the good of the community, and we will also be returning any data, because, of course, remember that having visibility on domains is extremely useful to the security community because it allows us to identify victims. That will also be provided back to the community. This will not be sold. One more question. Is that Rod? I'll repeat.
It's on its way.
Echo on.
So a quick question on that last point. Is that data that you're talking about going to be available on a more general usage policy than the current shadow server data is, which is used for remediation only at the affected ASN.
So this will, to be clear, this is only going to be run by shadow server for 6 months. Shadow server is providing the startup funding. It's paying my salary whilst we get this up, and it's going to pay some registration fees, but this is going to be an independent entity to shadow server. And Rod, I'd be delighted if you would come and sit on our ethics board to chew over these very decisions, because I know you're not busy enough already. I don't think I entirely answered your question, however. And Mark, I'm sorry, you've got your arm up as well. We will be a normal registrar, just an easy one to deal with. Thus, it will be entirely up to the person or the entity or the organization bringing those domains to us as to who they choose to sinkhole with. All we will do is direct them. We will effectively have, it'll be like the sort of Internet Explorer, choose a screen. You know, you can sync with Shadow Server, you can sinkhole with you know, Farsight and so on and so forth. And we're going to put the merits of those to people. I would personally expect that if a law enforcement or a public organization is bringing those domains, they should be giving that data back to the community. That would be my feeling.
When asking questions or making comments, please state your name and your affiliation so that we all know who you are. Thank you.
It's Mark Seiden from the SEC. So the problem with reverse engineering domain generation algorithms for botnets is that you're training the bad guys to change them more rapidly. So as soon as you reverse engineer and you register a very large number of domains, they'll just switch to another DGA, and basically you're fighting to stay above water, doing a lot of work for almost no payoff. You know, eventually they'll just build in the ability to be agile in their DGA so that you'll spend all your time reverse engineering. Do you have any way out of this?
No. I think I'd say if only we had a bunch of law enforcement officers who actually could complement the approach with you know, criminal activity. It's, if you haven't read it, this is one for the room, the Paul Vixie's 1.5 pages called Breeding Internet Superbugs is superb on this. It says that just like when we use antibiotics too much, we educate the bacteria, and if we keep just doing smackdowns, we educate the bad guys. I'd like to say that the takedowns I've worked on have always gone married hand in hand, technical activity and traditional kick-the-door-down law enforcement activity. That's the only way to go. And I completely echo your point, Mark, that this is... We are purely the repository. We are not going to be taking the policy decisions on whether we just do the domain, you know, the technical takedown, or whether we match that with other activity. And I would always hope that any case I worked on would marry the two. Going, gone.
Sounds like you made it.
We'll take the rest off.
Oh, what's the time line you said for the registrar accreditation?
Bobby asked, what's the timeline for the registrar accreditation? The record for registrar accreditation is 10 days. Michaeli Nalin holds that record. And another 3 years of wrangling, apparently. We're hoping to... It's kind of irrelevant because we are already able to register domain names. We'd essentially ask for your support in each country. Our challenge, being very open, is not registering domain names, because any mug can register domain names. Our challenge is in negotiating with each country code registry in countries that may suspect our motives in coming to them, and persuading them that for the good of the internet, that giving us large numbers of domain names for free is going to be the answer to at least some of these problems. And therefore, I'd ask that, I know we've got a lot of international colleagues here, I'd ask that you do support our work at the Registrar of Last Resort in order to with your national country code registry in your own countries, and through ICANN, through the work that's being done with the generic registries. But we're hoping to be set up ourselves as a registrar within the next month, Bobby. Dick? All good? Thanks very much.
Thank you for your patience. That was more than 5 minutes.
You're welcome. This seems like a great initiative. So, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for inviting me. I'm Adrian Diarra from Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. I'm pleased to have the attention of the overall ICANN community and the public safety workshop on some of the work's reflections that I've been doing on attribution. I just wanted to make sure that the title of on the agenda is includes this, because my point is really how to find ways to ease public safety online and how to help law enforcement better do this great job, which is telling who did the attack. And it's not an easy job. And being here today helped me really learn a lot. I'm still doing my research. Research is not over. I did one part. I'm going to do a second part. I did the why the, law enforcement needs some tools from the community to better attribute cybercrime. I talked about the why, by applying these tools, they might be helped. And there's going to be a next step of my work. But I just wanted to step back a bit and make two observations. The first observation is that attribution is not a science. It's both an art and a science. So I believe that you have the tactical side, you have the operational side, and you have the strategic side. And we are talking about the tactical side here on how law enforcement can have, and ICANN community can have, some minimum tools to help really reach its safety. And this is just one piece of the big puzzle. Having said that, I believe that my research is going to just point out one side of attribution, and I don't have the pretension to say that these recommendations that law enforcement made within the ICANN community will save everything today. The second observation that I want to make is that how great it is to be a newcomer here at ICANN, because I've been engaged by a lot of people. And a lot of people ask me this question, which is, do you work with law enforcement? My response is no. I'm a student. I'm interested with the subject. And I happen to engage with a lot of organizations, law enforcement, ICANN, and others, to help me further this subject. And law enforcement is the one so far today that opens its door so I can further my research on it. So I wanted to take advantage of this to thank the Interpol Global Complex for Innovation for having received me last summer, and to thank other law enforcement agencies, whether it's been the U.S., namely Bobby Flame, and other places. And I wanted to thank also the broader community, ICANN. I've had a chance to engage with a lot of people at ICANN, either from the SSAC side, Dave Piscitello, people like Margie Milan, Craig, and Craig was here, obviously Carlos. So I just wanted to make sure that it is clear that these thoughts that I'm sharing in this report are mine and are within a framework of my real intent to work on one specific subject of international security today, which is cybersecurity policy. Having said that, I just wanted to go deeper into the report. This report today actually just did a basic thing. It's quite descriptive, and I hope that I will have a chance to have an analytic side of it. The descriptive side has been to just identify what are the challenges today for law enforcement in attributing cyber attacks. And in identifying these challenges, identified what are being proposed to law enforcement today to really mitigate these challenges. And I ended up meeting the recommendations, which I was not aware of. I'm learning about ICANN. And so right now, I think that the next step will be to, okay, this has been done. Where are we going now? And this is why I'm here. I want to listen to everybody to help me, educate me, and to better understand how the end goal, which is public safety, can be met. The only thing that I feel compelled about is to make sure that a website that I rerun. I'm a registrant somehow because I have a website called Equalius, which helps the suppliers in crisis-torn fragile states to have access to information, donor-funded information. So as a registrant, I really believe that it's important to protect the website. And right now, this is one of the steps that we have to do. And the second thing that I wanted to share about, having said the fact that I'm a registrant and I'm an academic, when I arrived to the different stakeholders and to talk about this research, I've had a chance to really look at the challenges in detail. And I just wanted to really step back a bit more and talk about these three challenges. The technical challenges that I've seen for law enforcement to attribute cybercrime are the fact that, obviously, there are privacy proxy services, and there are some other very high-level services that prevent, obviously, to see the back end. And the second challenge that I've seen, and again, I'm new in this community, I propose to bear with me, I'm an academic and I'm just learning about it, is that you have legal challenges. And in these legal challenges, for law enforcement to attribute cybercrime, you have obviously the fact that you have people, excuse me one second. So in the legal challenges, you have the fact that public safety agencies have to work with people that are not the victims. And in doing this, you have obviously the country level people. You have the country level. You have the one second. You have the multilateral agreement to be gotten within different countries. And I believe these challenges have to be really addressed. So what was my main question in this report? And having shared these challenges, technical challenges, legal challenges, and structural challenges, one thing that I shared is that what can we do to really ensure DNS safety and stability without jeopardizing the very welcomed freedom of the internet and the expansion of the TLDs? By looking at the different recommendations, I saw three domains that can help address this. The first domain, and that was proposed through this recommendation, was transparency. Transparency by any business and any registrar to really share with different law enforcement and different public safety agencies what are their business. And secondly, you have the accountability. This accountability is that to broaden the accountability umbrella between not only ICANN registries, but also registrars and registrants. And the third umbrella, the third objective of these recommendations was about the who is accuracy. Who is accuracy today is a subject that has been shared a lot here, and I thought that the recommendations helped at least to further this subject. My hypothesis on this report was simple, and I try to be optimistic in the sense that to say that this recommendation can help some of the abuses of registrars and registrants over the past. And then to try to see what they did on the past and to see how this, by applying the new recommendations, they can be better helped. I further contended that this will be helpful for the multi-scale stakeholder model and in this mission to expand access to internet. in doing this, I thought it would be beneficial also, not only for a multi-stakeholder model, but for overall law enforcement to help identify the victims and quickly share information regionally and globally. So the recommendations that were made here, and from what I've seen in their applications, I looked at five domains in which they can improve the objective of accountability, transparency, and who is accuracy. The first outcome and the first recommendation that I've seen is that today I looked at one case study of the past, and I looked at it and I realized how by implementing one of these recommendations, this case study could have been successful for law enforcement. And this was a case study in the pharmaceutical crime. And I just looked at the fact that by having abuse point of contact and by having a channel of communication between public safety agencies and this pharmaceutical crimes registrar, they could have prevented two things. The first thing was that the pharmaceutical crime unit was asking law enforcement who was law enforcement. They were not believing on what was requesting the information. So the fact to have a channel of communication between both can help. The second thing that I found as an outcome is really the overall INA transition skeptics and how these recommendations might help the broader ICANN community in responding to this question that a lot of people are having right now, which is how can you tell us that the internet can remain safe within the INA transition? This week is Internet Governance Week in the U.S., and I thought that the objective is to not only sensibilize people, but also for the skeptics, point out the fact that we are in a domain that is still unsafe. So I think that this recommendation and the subsequent action might show how ICANN is taking seriously the public safety issue. Finally, the who is accuracy. The who is accuracy, I've been hearing a lot about it since I've been here. And I thought that whether or not the RDDS, the Registrar Directory, Data Directory Service working group, the expert working group is successful or not, I believe that it would be important to have a who is system, and this is a discussion to be had, to have a who is system who will help public safety agencies to have some information on a need-to-know basis. And I took some liberty to look at the strength, weakness, opportunities, and threats of the different stakeholders in law enforcement agencies to see how they can handle this work if it was given to them. And within this recommendation, I also proposed that based upon the challenges that they are facing, and this is something that I've been shared this morning here, it might be helpful to better include them in the multi-stakeholder model. And this is something that I believe might help in having broader understanding and clearly having law enforcement share is feedback. The last point that I shared in this report is about the multilateral assistance treaties. Today, they are being used by law enforcement for different purposes, and for the purpose of information security and for really combating cybercrime, I thought that it would be helpful to have some cyber-specific real clauses within the different hamlets in order to not only quickly help the information being transferred between different countries, but also, the end goal is the public safety. So that was maybe a bit academic, and I understand that as I'm someone very on the reflection side, And when it comes to the big talking, I'm not this type of person. But I just wanted to make sure that I summarize what is behind this report. First of all, I wanted it to be really neutral, and that's why being here would give me the opportunity to engage with a lot of people. Secondly, I thought that right now, when it comes to the outcomes of these recommendations, and when it comes to the outcomes of how impactful it can be on the registrars, on the people's privacy, I believe that we may think on one thing, which is that you cannot show the consequences of something that did not happen. You cannot give some statistics, I believe, on something that did not happen, because the goal of this recommendations is to deter from cybercrime, or at least when it happens, to have some mechanism to identify. So without judging whether or not you have to keep them or not, I believe that we have to be really thoughtful or something, which is that law enforcement, public safety agencies in general, need really basic tools. It is another discussion to whether or not public safety agencies have to really show exactly why they need it, and by going into the detail of why they need it. That's another discussion. But I think if they say that they need these tools, it's like a surgeon and his scissors. If the surgeon tells that he needs the scissor to make the surgery, I think it's really hard to say that, you have to tell me what will happen when I give you a surgery, and what would have happened if I would not have given you your scissors. So today, this is what I wanted to share about this report. I'm open to your comments, and I'm open especially to really speak with different levels, registrars, registrants, and keep talking with law enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian. Thank you very much. Any questions from audience?
If the audience doesn't have a question. You've touched on MLAT. Do you have any proposals for how we should move forward with MLAT?
The MLATs on this report have been touched quickly. And to me, when I said to propose some cyber-specific clauses in the MLAT, is to really look at the current MLATs and to see how we'll have, when it comes to timeline, time taken to transfer information, how to improve this time, and whether or not is possible to have a specific clause which says when it relates to cyber-specific issues, we have to identify people in different countries in charge of these cyber-specific issues. So therefore, when there is an issue, these people can take care of it quickly, and it goes without waiting on the traditional process.
Thank you. Bobby.
Hi, this is Bobby Flame from FBI. A question for you. In doing your analysis with your study, are you looking to look maybe at cybercrime reports to see where the DNS abuse is coming from, so you know you could match the DNS abuse with some of the law enforcement recommendations and the 2013 REA?
Absolutely, and as I said at the beginning, the first part of the report was why and what, and the second part is going to be what has been implemented. Was it efficient? To put it like that, and I'm looking for reports of DNS abuse. I'm open to have all the reports from all sides, from law enforcement side, from the registrar side, from the ICANN side, and based upon these reports, and to avoid any bias, I will respond to this question.
More More questions, comments?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm a fellow from Zambia, law enforcement, Michael Irishe. I'm trying to find out on your research project, which area did you get data from? Did you get any data from Africa, or it was just maybe from the West?
As I said, the first part of this report is descriptive. So to describe the why law enforcement needed this, the challenges, I've engaged with Western law enforcement, and I've engaged with, obviously, law enforcement coordination agencies. But for the second part of this project, I believe it's important to really delve into other law enforcement. As I said, this is a multilateral issue. So right now, I did not check the other continents and other. For the case of Africa, I've not checked that yet.
Ask him. Thank you, but because your report will only be complete if you touch the African side as well.
I'm sorry.
I'm saying you should also touch Africa.
I'm planning to touch Africa, and as a matter of fact, the case study about the pharmaceutical crime was not Africa, but it was in Asia, and I'm planning, if, again, in assessing the impact, if the different abuses are being done in Africa, I'm planning to touch Africa. And as a matter of fact, this is really something that's going to help me, because I want to have one case per continent, if possible.
Sorry, where's the questioner? Hiya. What reporting is there from Africa before Michele jumps in?
In Africa, in terms of, from what I've heard, in terms of cybercrime, it is, I would say cybercrime exists, but The fight is equal to zero. So meaning cybercriminals are able to flourish without any hindrance of any kind, because in as much as you may have the law, but there's no one to actually implement and actually probably investigate such cases, because law enforcement officers are in no means able to fight cybercrime. There's no capacity building that is happening in terms of cybercrime. We're as good as stagnant.
Not just Africa. This is Carlos from ICANSSR team. There's one difference that I would like to note. Cybercrime is one thing. DNS abuse, which is, you can think of it as a subchapter within the bigger generic category of cybercrime. So the report that Adrian is writing in all his research is more focused on DNS abuse and the agreement between ICANN and the registrars, rather than in the broad category of cybercrime in its many different facets and kinds.
There's someone at the back. Yeah, Mikhail.
Go to a technology conference and none of the technology works. Mikhail Nail, I'm chair of the registrars. Been trying to follow what your report is about. One thing you seem to say a lot of, and you seem to say that you're talking a lot to law enforcement. Have you spoken to data protection and data privacy agencies? Have you spoken to consumer protection? Have you spoken to people on the other side? Because if you haven't, then I'd have to wonder about what you're actually hoping to achieve. Because a lot of the time, law enforcement talks about how they want to have access to everything. And in many cases, what they want access to is legally not possible.
Well, on this report, for the first part, I've talked with law enforcement, I've talked with civil society. I've been looking for talking with privacy and civil liberties persons. And as I said, this was the first part descriptive. And for a second part, which is more analytical and which is the impact not only on law enforcement but also on the overall stakeholder community, including civil liberties people. Well, I will be happy to meet with them. And if you have any suggestion, I will be happy to meet with them. Thank you.
Okay, Kostik, can't get my here.
J.M. Emerson, International Association Chiefs of Police. The question I have for you is, when you were doing your basic research, literature review, talking to law enforcement, even though it might have been Western blushed, were there gaps in the information, or what? How did the data on DNS abuse present? From where is really what I'm getting at. What were your best data sources?
Well, ICANN community has been a great source to me because I've gone through the different communiques to really see what has been the background on these recommendations, and to really understand why these recommendations were made. My data source have been to engage with experiences on the ground from law enforcement. And I just wanted to have at least one example that shows me that there is at least one recommendation that has been that could have prevented one abuse. So now on the next step, which is really the assessment of what happened on 2014 from January 1st to December 31st, 2014, I'll be happy to really not only engage law enforcement but others about this.
More questions? No. So thank you very much, Adrian. And feel free to ask from Adrian more information about the research and then the future plans for the research. So Adrian's going to be here the whole week, more or less. Yeah. Thank you. And next, we are going to have our frequent visitor. ICANN compliance team.
Come and sit down, Maggie.
So just before we start this small announcement from Bennett.
We are. Sorry, Maggie.
So, you're joining the compliance team, right?
Is there something like a small announcement from Benedict?
There is a small announcement. Sorry, your attention just for 1 second before Maggie speaks. We'll be chatting, thanks to Michaeli's generosity, I'll be able to go into a little more detail on the Registrar of Last Resort plans at 9:30 tomorrow morning at the Registrar Stakeholder Group. Is Michaeli still in the room? Is that Sophia, Michaeli?
You said
I'm backing away now.
If you don't know, I love hats, so, and dark chocolate. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Maggie Sarad. I'm VP of Contractual Compliance. I'm always happy, so don't ask me. Many people ask me in the hallway today, are you always happy? It's like, yes, life is wonderful. Thank you for having us this afternoon. Before we start, we have just a brief update for you, but mostly we want to hear from you. But before we start, I would like to give the floor a little bit to Alan, my new boss, to introduce himself, but also talk. I know you, some of you met him in LA, but also to just hear from him a little bit about his role, and since he's been with us since ICANN 51. And then we'll move to a brief update. The presentation contains additional slides, but I know what's near and dear to your heart here, so we'll move straight into that, and hopefully we can address any questions you have for us.
Hi. Some of you I've met before, some of you I haven't. I'm Alan Grogan, and as of, I guess, the LA meeting, I was appointed to be in charge of contract compliance and consumer safeguards. The two pieces of that, the contract compliance one is the relatively more straightforward one, which is about enforcing the terms and conditions of our agreements with registrars and registries, and there are obviously issues there in terms of interpretation and different people in the community who interpret the contracts differently and think they should be enforced differently. And I think one of the things I want to do is work to get greater clarity on how we interpret those contracts and how we intend to enforce them. On the consumer safeguard side, Fadi and the board recognize that there are difficult, intractable issues out there, some of which law enforcement deals with, some of which other people in the community deal with, that may or may not fit neatly within the terms of the contract in terms of ability to address them by declaring somebody to be in breach of the agreement, but that as members of the greater community, we feel we should work with other people to try to help find solutions. So one of the things I want to do is try to reach out to different constituencies in the community, to law enforcement, regulatory agencies, civil society, civil liberties, whoever, and try to figure out ways that we can work together to solve some of these problems. And if it's not a problem that I can solve through contract enforcement, maybe we can help put complaining parties in touch with the right people who can, or maybe we can help provide complaining parties with information that would help them solve the problems. And maybe cooperatively we can figure out some solutions. So that's kind of high level what I'm thinking about and plan to roll out some more concrete proposals to do that in the coming weeks.
Okay, next slide, please. So a brief update since ICANN 51. We're also providing you, can we say just briefly on the agenda, please, Carlos? A couple of slides on some of the lessons learned summary since ICANN 51. We usually provide those from one ICANN meeting to the next. I'm not going to go in details about them, but it gives an appreciation to the ICANN community. What are some of the things that compliance is working with? And when I speak of lessons learned, it's not lessons learned across both ICANN, the contracted party, the community. It's not specific just to contracted party. It's all of us. These are new agreements. There are opportunities for learning, and we continue to do so. We also provided a few slides on the policy efforts because we are not only focused on enforcing the contract. We provide a lot of efforts and time and input into the policy work. It's like a full cycle. When, for example, when there is a discussion on the transfer policy, the policy group comes to us, asks for some data, we provide data. We're not involved in every dialogue, but we also get involved in reviewing some of the recommendations. So our voice, the compliance team's voice, based on the experience and lessons learned, is fed into the policy effort. So a couple of slides on there for you to look at. Again, I'm going to focus mostly on updates since ICANN 51, and the depth and details of the other bullets will be provided at an update on Wednesday. Every Wednesday at every ICANN meeting since Dakar, compliance has an open forum where we need and we invite all of you to join us. It's a way to exchange information, but mostly a way to get an appreciation for the different roles and diversity we have at ICANN. I know many people say, we don't like your compliance, and some people say, we like you. It's not about liking us or not. It's about the role we bring to this community, and it's about the role that each and every one of you have in the community. So please join us Wednesday to hear a full update, but mostly for a Q&A session. So with that, next slide, please. So since ICANN 51, as many of you may know, we have launched a three-year audit program. In 2012 was the start. This is the year three of that program. The program was launched to baseline. There was a perception that everybody is a bad party. Well, compliance is about facts. We launched the program to baseline the current environment. The current environment at the time consisted of the legacy TLDs, but also consisted of about 1,000 registrars on the 2009 RAA. We have been reporting on this audit program every year as we progress through it. So the program now is underway, and sad to say that that ICANN has terminated four registrars prior to the commencement even of the audit because they did not respond or provide data for the audit. All notices are published on the ICANN website. We also, since ICANN 51, have completed the first round of the new registry agreement audit. As many of you know, with the new GTLD rollout, we have a lot of new players and existing players now in the ICANN GTLD world. So the first round of the audit program was launched in August. We completed the effort in December. The report is published now on our website. The first round consisted of 14 TLDs. We plan on launching a second round after ICANN 52. And we will continue to conduct audits throughout the contracted party world and announcing and publishing the events and efforts on our website. In addition, for the past few years, we've committed to publishing a contractual compliance annual report. We publish it at a calendar base so we don't confuse the fiscal years across the world. Every calendar year, we publish an annual report, and it's posted on our website. We are in the process of finalizing the edits on it, putting it in a standard format. The content is already. We just need to put it in a standard format and publish it. It should be published within the next few days. All reports can be found at the link provided below. Another effort that compliance focuses on is continuous improvement. Continuous improvement starts with us as staff members to continue to learn and understand and focus and improve on our work with as it relates to this compliance space. But continuous improvement is also about the quality of the work as it relates to the process, to the systems, and also to the quality of the complaints. So a couple of efforts were launched, and we just provide a few bullets about them here, to ensure there's an ongoing compliance in these efforts. One of them is quality assurance, to make sure that the accuracy of complaints that we closed are still correct, just sample sizing based on previous complaints. Another effort, sometimes when we receive complaints or we identify a non-compliance issue, it requires a remediation. So we work, the contracted party proposes a plan for remediation. We follow up through it. They report back to us. But sometimes testing the remediation is not immediate. So the remediation quality review happens after the fact to ensure compliance with the obligations. Public interest commitment. I'm looking at Lole. There she is. This discussion we have had on many occasions, and it continues to be held in the ICANN community. What compliance did, again, the best thing to address any perception is to put facts behind it. So we launched an effort of monitoring. We did not launch an audit. This was a what we call proactive monitoring effort. And the effort was about working with the registry operators to see, are they in compliance with their mandatory and with their selected voluntary picks? Much more in-depth discussions can be held on Wednesday and to address many of the questions. But what we wanted to note is that we had 264 GTLDs that were monitored for specification 11. And you see by each section the percent of compliance within the area. You don't see red for the remaining on purpose. Red means negative. It's still white because there are remediation plans in place and the contracted parties are working to either complete their plan, complete their report, or complete their updates to become compliant. I'm going to turn the next few slides over to Jennifer to provide you an update about the abuse reports requirement.
Thanks, Maggie. Hi, everyone. I'm Jennifer Scott, Manager Contractual Compliance at ICANN. There have been a lot of conversations about abuse report handling recently, so we just wanted to give an update on what the requirements of the 2013 Registrar Accreditation Agreement were. And there's two sections. One is pertaining to law enforcement reports specifically, and that's section 3.18.2. Whereas the other section in the RAA 3.18.1 is addressing abuse reports that come from non-law enforcement agencies. And this slide just lays out the different requirements between the two. As they pertain to law enforcement, the requirements for the registrar is that they must have a dedicated abuse contact email and phone number. And they must also have, all registrars must have the abuse contact email and telephone number in the WHOIS output. Reports that come from law enforcement and other entities that have been designated as such need to be reviewed by registrars within 24 hours of receipt. And the standard in the contract is that the registrar take necessary and appropriate actions in response to that report. The reports coming from law enforcement can be from any applicable jurisdiction as long as the local jurisdiction of the registrar has designated that entity as a law enforcement type entity that can report under that standard. Opposite that is the reports under 3.18.1 that can come from anyone in any location without any kind of designation. The standard there is that the registrar must take reasonable and prompt steps to investigate and respond appropriately to those reports. The reasonable steps are detailed in the next slide a little more. And you can go ahead to the next slide. So we can talk about those here. And this just details also ICANN's complaint processing of abuse reports. So ICANN does accept complaints from the community regarding any abuse reports they may have filed with the registrar. And the first step that ICANN takes when they receive one of these complaints is to ask the reporter to provide the abuse report that they sent to the registrar and show that it went to the abuse contact. And if it passes that test, then ICANN will send that complaint to the registrar. And here are some bullets that ICANN could request of the registrar to see what they've done in response to receiving that abuse report. And so, one is to show that the steps that they've taken to investigate and respond to the report. And then down below are some examples of those steps that we've seen registrars take in these cases. And that could include contacting the registrant, asking for and obtaining supporting evidence from the registrant, providing hosting information for the content of the website that's being complained about, also performing a WHOIS verification, or suspending the domain. The other things we ask ICANN, ask registrars, is the time that it took them to take to respond to the report, any correspondence about the report between the complainant and the registrar or the registrar and the registrant, the link to the website, registrar's website, where the abuse contact email and handling procedure is published, and any location of the dedicated abuse email and telephone for law enforcement reports to be reported.
Matt, there are three seats here available if you guys want to sit.
And here's some reasons for closing an abuse complaint that's been filed with ICANN. And that's when the registrar responds to the ICANN notice demonstrating that they've taken the reasonable steps under the Section 318.1, or similarly that they've reviewed the law enforcement report that they've received within 24 hours. The abuse contact information has been published. If that was the original complaint, is that the user who's complaining couldn't find the abuse contact information? If that's published, that's a reason to close the complaint. Another requirement is that abuse records have to be maintained. And so if that is the issue and it's showed by the registrar that those records have been maintained, we can close the complaint. And the same for now, providing evidence that the abuse contacts are being monitored appropriately and that the domain was suspended or canceled if that is the action that the registrar took in response to the report.
Thank you, Jennifer. Like I said, I leave some homework for you to read. Otherwise, join us Wednesday, and we'll be happy to talk more about the other slides. With this, we want to hear from you. We want to take any questions you may have for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are having some colleagues, our newcomers here in ICANN, and I think they are first time they're hearing about what you're doing, compliance team. But any comment from participants? Doreen?
First of all,
thanks
for coming, as always, with all the energy and information you bring. We appreciate it. So I'm interested in a couple of things. I talk with other colleagues from around the world on consumer protection issues. This is Laureen, thank you. This is Laureen Capen from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission. I talk with consumer protection colleagues from around the world on consumer protection issues. And many colleagues who don't come to ICANN meetings and aren't necessarily that well informed about how ICANN works and contract compliance works are nevertheless very interested in dealing with frauds and deceptive activities perpetuated through websites. And a question that gets raised very often is, well, if we're seeing a website that is being used for criminal activity, for fraud and deception, for example, a website that is pretending to sell tickets for a musical event and it's just a ripoff, they're not a bona fide seller of tickets, they're just stealing people's money. Their question is, well, what can we do about it? How can, is ICANN an entity that can help us with that? So I'm passing that on for your reflection and also thoughts about, and this is to you, Alan, for consumer protection issues, notwithstanding contract compliance issues, how can ICANN, from a consumer protection perspective, help facilitate discussions between those involved in consumer protection and other players in the industry to facilitate ways for consumer protection agencies to stop this sort of activity?
If I may remind each and everyone, for any report of this nature, like we've talked in the past, as the first bullet indicates on slide 9, please have a dialogue with the contracted party. If that does not produce a collaboration and effort, then come to us. We will help facilitate. Your verb usage is very well stated, Laureen. Facilitate. because we're not agents, we're not regulatory officers. However, we all want to maintain the security and stability of the internet. A lesson learned, because we personally experienced it, we learned through a report that was produced a long time ago, a few months back, implicating a registrar for bad acting, causing somebody's death. Well, we didn't know about it. The registrar didn't know about it. So when we tried to address it and it became more knowledgeable, facilitating the dialogue is all we did. Sometimes we picked up the phone and said, are you aware of this? Can you take actions on that? It's not a compliance obligation to do it. So we know that dialogue takes us further. So that's why we always say, please, we ask any reporter to share with us what dialogue have you had and what it consists of. And Alan.
Yeah, so I think Maggie summarized it quite well, right? There are various things that are problems on the internet and in the global community that we would like to try to help work with others to solve. We may not be able to solve them by declaring that the activities in question are a breach of the agreement, because they may not be. But I think there are things that collectively we can do, and one of the things I want to do is try to reach out to others in the community to create a forum where we can communicate and determine collectively what can we do. If we identify problems that need to be addressed, if ICANN can't address them, who can we refer them to? How can we help those parties in solving things? I mean, obviously there are aspects of what we do, like who is information that's useful if you're trying to track down the registrant or the web hosting facility. And we do engage in informal dialogue with our contracted parties and have good relationships with a number of them. So sometimes, as Maggie points out, a phone call or an email will result in action being taken, even if it's not under threat of it being a breach of the contract. That same thing, by the way, is also true for CCTLDs, where we have even less ability to enforce contracts, but we do have open channels of communication with most of the CCTLD operators and can reach out to them informally and bring matters to their attention and sometimes impact their behavior.
This is Carlos from the ICANN security team. Adding to what Alan and Maggie mentioned, that's something that we in the security team do quite often. We receive, not complaints, but requests for assistance, if you want, from people in the security community or law enforcement agencies regarding domain names that are being used for malicious purposes. We informally reach out to the involved registrars or CCTLD operators, and sometimes all it takes is making them realize the provisions in their registration agreements or their terms of service that are being breached by the registrants, by those who register the domains that are being abused or that are being abusive. Because oftentimes the registrars don't even know or haven't realized that those provisions are there. So when they see it, they take action pretty quickly, and they're very responsive.
One other thing that I wanted to say, because I think there's been a lot of confusion about this out there, and it's probably more of interest to regulatory agencies than law enforcement, but there might be some overlap in both cases, is on the public interest commitments that are embodied in the agreements. Some of those public interest commitments are mandatory in the sense that they were imposed by the NGPC as a result mostly of GAC advice. In some cases, the registry operators themselves agreed to so-called voluntary PICs, meaning they drafted PICs and made voluntary commitments to serve the public interest. From ICANN compliance's point of view, those are part of the contract, right? They're embodied in Specification 11. They're enforceable terms and conditions of the agreement. I think there's some misunderstanding by some members of the community who believe that the PIC DRP process is the only process for enforcement of those public interest commitments. It's not. ICANN compliance can and will pursue enforcement of those PICs. And there was concern expressed by some regulators and others that the PIC DRP process may take too long. I think in many cases where there's a straightforward breach of those commitments, it'll be handled through the normal ICANN compliance process, and I think last month our average time from initiating an investigation to closing it was 11 days. So I don't think people need to be concerned necessarily that the PIC-DRP process is going to drag things out. In some cases, it may. In some cases, things may go to arbitration or mediation. But in many cases, ICANN compliance will be successful in resolving that the same way that we would enforce any other provision of the contract.
One last thing, if I may add. It's easier for us to address things that are related. This is Carlos again, ICANN security team, that are related to technical abuse, say malware, botnets. It's way easier for us to address those kinds of issues as opposed to issues that involve content as such. So if it's child abuse material, it's not something that we typically be able to do much. It's a very complicated issue. It's specifically law enforcement for them to address. Copyright violations, it's something that we can't really address, or other kinds of content-related things. Phishing is kind of a gray area. However, we cooperate, we participate. We're members of the APWG, the Anti-Phishing Working Group. We're creating a system, helping them, rather, create a system for analysis of domain registration data, of domains that are included in their feeds, domains that are used for phishing purposes. So just wanted to clarify that. Thanks.
Bobby.
I just wanted to encourage, some of the new law enforcement that's in the room. We have the Nepal police. We have some new French. We have Zambia police. So I think the great thing here is for contract compliance to even be more effective, we have to do a lot more reporting ourselves. If it doesn't interfere with our cases, letting contract compliance know if there are WHOIS inaccuracies, letting them know if there's any type of abuse that would be in breach of that registrar accreditation agreement. That gives more transparency. That gives the statistics maybe that also the registrars were talking about. What's the need for doing all that we're doing? So for all my law enforcement, public safety, other government people here, contract compliance plays a big part, and you know, we need to provide them with the necessary information.
Yeah, and I just second that. I'd encourage you to communicate with us. If you're identifying problems that you need assistance with, then let us know. If you're in Los Angeles, come visit us or reach out to us by phone or email, whether it's to the compliance team or whether it's to the security team. Both of us are here and ready to listen and ready to talk about what we can do to help.
One thing that I would like you all to keep in mind is that while you have visibility over malicious activity as such, activity that harms people, that infects machines, that wipe out people's bank accounts, the compliance team has visibility over different kinds of things. They see when domains are not transferred when they should. They see when a trademark might be in breach and someone files a UDRP and the registrars are kind of arguing and the domain doesn't get transferred pursuant to the UDRP decision, so it's different things that they see. If you're seeing malicious activity tied to domains, as Bobby said and Alan reinforced, please do submit the reports because what they see is not what you see. And if you're going to get upset at them because they're not doing something, because a registrar is not being responsive, or you think that it's not being responsive, then make sure that you are submitting the reports before you get upset at anyone. Submit the reports and then see what happens.
Michele. We managed to do that.
Your international counterparts have succeeded, Bobby, where you failed. Michele Nalan, for the record, chair of the registrars. Just a couple of things. You know, from the registrar perspective, I don't think any of us are particularly interested in helping criminals, because generally speaking, criminals don't pay their bills, and you know, it's not good business. You know, it's not hard to contact pretty much all of us. I mean, we all provide contact details on our websites. If you can read who is, you can find our contact details in there. It's there. Honest to God, it is there. It's a contractual obligation. You can talk to Maggie and her team and Alan's team and other people, sure. But also, you know, talk to the hosting companies. Talk to the people who are actually hosting the content. Because we are not contractually obliged to start getting into matters of content. It's not as simple. What may seem clear-cut for you is not going to necessarily be clear-cut for us. If you're sending us a report about something, provide clear examples of what the type of abuse is. Don't just say, this is abusive. I mean, abusive why? What is the abuse? I mean, if a smart criminal is going to set something up in such a way that I cannot see it. So the kind of thing that we've seen in the past is where it will only be visible in certain countries coming from certain IP ranges. These kind of things. I mean, they're not stupid most of the time. But, you know, we, the registrars, are reachable, and we will mostly respond. But if you say it's, you know, we're going to respond to things that we can respond to. And, you know, if you want us to do more than that, you might need to send us something more. I mean, depending on the jurisdiction, what is required to do something will vary. But please don't start asking ICANN to beat us over the head for things that we are not contractually obliged to do. Thank you.
And as Maggie said, please reach out to them before you reach out to us.
Right. Hi, it's Mark Seiden. Can you talk about any compliance activities in the area of the reseller channels, which serve to slow down response by registrars typically, and also privacy protection services, which serve the same, have the same effect?
Hi, Jennifer Scott again. Regarding the resellers, we do at ICANN receive complaints from folks saying they're upset with resellers. Bottom line, ICANN's contract is with the registrar. So while there is some leeway, I guess, for contractual compliance to ask registrars about their resellers, we can't directly send resellers compliance notices. So we have to do that through the registrar. And we have had instances where complaints about resellers have resulted in notices to registrars. And we inquire of the registrar how they're ensuring compliance with the RAA from their reseller, which is a requirement of the contract that a reseller cannot put the registrar out of compliance. So, you know, that's kind of the route that ICANN contractual compliance has to take and does so and has been successful at that. Privacy proxy? Yeah. Can you repeat your privacy proxy question, please?
Well, do you have compliance activities with respect to privacy proxies at the moment?
Yes. There is a specification in the RAA specifically for privacy and proxy registration. So we do accept complaints about that as well and also proactively monitor privacy and proxy services that are used by registrars to make sure that they are in compliance with the contract.
So do you have any do you have any expectation that you'll be bringing these non-parties to the table in the future as full-fledged participants in the RAA or in subsequent agreements?
That question is probably above my pay grade.
There has been discussion from time to time about whether ICANN would provide some certification of privacy proxy providers, but there's nothing on the table currently that would do that. I think a couple of the things Jennifer said brought to mind a couple of other things that I wanted to mention just because I know there are people in the room who are new to ICANN and learning about what contractual compliance does. Just to be clear, you know, we're not law enforcement, we're not a regulator. Our ability to take action is limited to taking action against our contracted parties. and it's to take action against our contracted parties for breach of the agreement. So when you're thinking about how to bring complaints to us and asking us to take action, kind of keep that in mind, right? That if you're asking us to take an action directly against a registrant, which is often the case, we don't have a direct relationship with the registrant, right? What we can do is look at our contract with the registrar and ask, is the registrar not doing something that it should be doing with respect to the registrant? But ultimately, our only enforcement rights are whatever is in our contract with registrants and registries. And most of you know that, but some of the newcomers may not realize that. So
one of the specific problems with resellers is that they have the direct customer contact and they know their customer better than the registrars do. And the know your customer and verification requirements are on the registrar, but the reseller ends up doing it typically. So there's a gap there is the problem. What specific compliance requirements are there for registrars to verify the who is information for reseller provided customers? And is that a compliance activity? Because it tends to be looser in the case of reseller-provided customers.
Yes, we do that. Any requirement of the registration agreement that is fulfilled by the reseller is still enforced through the registrar. So compliance by the reseller is still enforced. It's just done through the registrar because that's who the contract ICANN has with.
So the registrar is obligated to obligate the reseller to obtain accurate who is information. And if they don't do that, we can pursue the registrar for failing to do that.
I want to take the opportunity and welcome Dan Blumenthal. He's the chair of the working group that's precisely working on the new specification in privacy proxy services. I wanted to ask, Don, could you please give us a brief explanation of the current status of the work of the working group, pardon the redundancy, and how the accreditation program, the potential accreditation program, is looking like or will look like at this point?
Okay. It does. Oh, okay. I got to hold you closer. Sorry about that. We have a group called the PPSAI, PDPWG, Privacy Proxy Standards Services Accreditation Issues Policy Development Process Working Group. For the newcomers, welcome to ICANN. Okay. We're about a year into our work, and basically what's in the current RAA is temporary standards, pending this group coming up with a full set of accreditation standards. Like I said, we're about a year in. We've covered a number of issues from basic accreditation to issues involving relaying complaints. We're looking at issues concerning reveal, although we've chosen to split it into disclose versus publish. We've discussed should any registrant be eligible for a privacy proxy registration or only certain categories, such as commercial versus private, transactional commercial versus anything else. We're getting close to, I think, publishing a draft report. We are currently looking very closely at one of the, I think, the most contentious issue, which is issues concerning reveal or publish disclose. We've got a public meeting Wednesday morning, and I got in last night, and I'm just in enough fried state that I don't remember when or where. But check the schedule. It is Wednesday morning. But I did want to get up and at least, thanks, Carlos, address that piece of the privacy proxy routine.
A
Okay, this one more. Michaela?
Thank you. Thanks. Just to Don's point, the Privacy Proxy Working Group meets in Hullis, or Hulle, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, at 9:30 on Wednesday morning. I think that's the room next door to this one. To the gentleman speaking about registrars' requirements to know their customer, that's not a contractual obligation. If your GoDaddy has several million customers, so I don't think they would know every single one of their customers intimately, but they do have obligations under the contract, as do we, and those ones are the ones that are being fulfilled. The argument around resellers, always interesting to talk about it, but the reality is, would you prefer to deal with 100 or 200 responsive registrars or 25,000 to 100,000 unresponsive and not particularly technical resellers? I mean, a lot of the resellers that are out there are very, very small operators. They're not particularly technical, depending on which kind of reseller service they're using. They may not even understand what you're asking them. The registrar of record is bound by the contract, whether they're selling directly or via a reseller. If you're having issues with getting a response from the registrar, then Maggie and Alan's team are the people to talk to. Thanks.
Thank you. So Lorraine first.
Thanks. This is Lorraine from the Federal Trade Commission again. Can you shed a little more light on when ICANN compliance process would come into play versus going through the PIC drip? Because I know we've the public interest commitment dispute resolution process, or PIC drip. Because I've heard that before, but I'm still not clear on when one path would be followed versus the other.
So in most cases, we would pursue enforcement of the PICs through normal channels and normal timetables, the same as any other compliance matter. Which means that, so the PIC DRP process kicks off a process of 30 days of consultation between the complaining party and the registry. By the time that 30 days is up, compliance may have resolved the issue, right? So there's no reason that we would delay pursuing enforcement by compliance, except there may be some areas where the nature of the complaint is such that compliance declines to pursue the matter or decides there isn't really a violation, and the complaining party continues to believe there is and wants to pursue the PIC DRP. That's the most likely scenario where I actually see the PIC DRP being pursued, is where there's a disagreement between compliance and the complaining party as to whether there's a violation, or possibly in some areas where the nature of the complaint touches on areas that are outside the scope of what ICANN's remit is in terms of its mission and enforcement. So to give you an example, if somebody had a voluntary PIC, and then, you know, there are no standard PICs like this, but if somebody had submitted a voluntary PIC that was vague enough that what it said was, I will provide a rapid takedown procedure for a site containing pornography, without defining what rapid takedown means and without defining what pornography is. And if we got a complaint from somebody in a country where they consider pornography to include anything from Playboy-type content to potentially women wearing short-sleeve blouses or low-cut dresses, we probably would decline to pursue that as a ICANN enforcement matter. They'd be welcome to try to pursue that through the PIC DRP mechanism and take that to a panel, and we'd see where that led. Right?
Okay, thank you.
Jim Emerson, International Association of Chiefs of Police. Does ICANN maintain a data source or information on the correlation between contractual registrars and resellers, given the size of the reseller base?
I'm not aware of that database.
We can find out. I can get back to you on that. The Racer Services team, I believe, might be working on that, but I have to. I can get back. I can ask and get back to you.
Okay. Are there more questions? If not, no. Okay, Maggie, please.
So no questions, right? Just want to remind everyone, let us know, work with us. Go on the website, on the ICANN.org website. We have we keep the compliance website up to date. There are on the page where you go to submit complaints, we have provided what we call Learn More, which provides more information about what is this about in English, not in legal terminology. And there's a form, if you think that that qualifies, to fill out the form and provide the complaint to us. We encourage, like we said before, is many of the scenarios that come our way have not even made it to the contracted party. So give each other that courtesy of working through the issues. We're here to work with everybody in the ICANN community. I want to thank you for your time, but before I close, I always want to thank the amazing team I have the honor to work with. With me in the back, I have, if you raise your hand, compliance team, I see Jasmine, Sumi, Roger, Jonathan, is Victor here? Ashley, there you go, Ashley and Victor. But I also want to recognize the team. I see them in the Adobe room. I see Istanbul's on board here, and we've got the LA team listening in. Truly an honor to work with each one of you guys, and I'm looking forward to continue to work with the community on behalf of our team and ICANN. Thank you very much for this afternoon.
Thank you very much for the compliance. And next we're going to have a session that we missed because of the WHO session. So Craig Aaron. So we take first this one.
Hello, everyone. My name is Greg Aaron. I've been over time a registry operator, launching and operating large gTLDs and ccTLDs. I'm also a cybersecurity expert. I'm a member of ICANN-SAC. I'm a senior research fellow at the Anti-Phishing Working Group, and I do research and e-crime response. But today I'm here in my personal capacity. Bobby Flame asked me to bring you up to date on a very important discussion that's going on in the community right now about abuse and abuse response. Okay. So a couple of years ago, the community was trying to figure out what the new contract was going to look like for the new gTLDs. And that was a process where there were tons of inputs from various sources. It's a very long contract and a lot going into it. And one of the things that some people wanted addressed was, what responsibilities does a registry operator have to deal with abuse? The GAC, amongst other parties, asked that something about that be put into the contract. So during that very tumultuous time, lots of things were put into the contract, and this is one of them. And this is what it says. It says that a registry operator will periodically conduct a technical analysis to assess whether the domains in the TLD are being used to perpetrate security threats, such as farming, phishing, malware, and botnets. Okay, so that's what the contracts currently say. And then people started to ask, well, what does that actually mean? What does this language actually obligate us to? How do we do these kinds of things? And so it's becoming especially important now because about 500 of these new TLDs have actually launched, and they actually have to start paying attention to these kinds of things. People want to know what the compliance department's going to do, and the compliance department has to figure out what this language means and what standards might be applied to it. Also, this language is important for the future because it applies to new gTLDs now, but this contract might apply down the line to the old legacy TLDs like Common, Net, Info, and Biz, and so forth. So this is perhaps also a conversation about what the future looks like. So people started talking about this language, and there was an agreement that we needed to circle back to it to understand what this language means, so that this is now starting to happen. So what's a technical analysis? We're going to have to look at the community, basically, to come together, and people asked that a framework be developed to understand what this language means. So this is a conversation that's starting. The GAC asked for this framework. So there are some issues that are starting to surface, and among them are as follows. And again, this is my personal take on what I'm hearing so far. One of the issues is that there's not a shared sense of what the goals were behind the language in the contract. Now, the GAC, I think, wanted people to take responsibility for their domain spaces. They wanted to make the internet a better place, a safer place for users and internet users. So if that was the goal, is the language a good way to deliver that or not? Some people also don't think that they have a responsibility to monitor their space and take responsibility for it. That's a philosophical difference that different people have. There's an issue that TLDs are very different from each other. Some of our TLDs that are launching now are very broad-based. They're open to everybody. They're in general availability to anyone in the world. Others are specialized in various ways. Like some of them are specialized for particular brand owners who own and operate those spaces. They are the only ones who can register and use domains in those spaces. So they obviously represent different threat profiles. So the one of the problems is one size does not fit all. And so therefore, some people are saying, well, it would be inappropriate for anybody to dictate specific solutions that everyone should use because they're all different and they all have different needs. It's an interesting take on things, and I think that's largely true. Some registry operators are worried about cost. They think that they have enough going on. They have budgets that are stretched and so forth. Some of the problems are semantic. Sometimes people use words interchangeably, and sometimes that makes people either nervous or confused. The language in the contract talks about phishing and farming and malware and so forth, and those are criminal things, but the word criminal sometimes puts people off because what is criminal in one jurisdiction is not criminal in another. So what's in free speech in one country is not in another country. And that makes people nervous because then you start to get into content issues. Instead, what might be more useful is talking about specific types of problems that we really want to address using specific words. And then, of course, there's an issue of what ICANN should be doing or what is within its power. And again, this is sometimes a philosophical discussion that people have different opinions about. But ICANN certainly has some jurisdiction over registration issues, which means what domains can be registered, but not so much oversight or power over how domain names are used or what purposes they're put to. So that's another issue. So here are some things that we could consider in this discussion. Is the goal to reduce harm, to make the internet a safer place, and is the goal to be effective in that endeavor? Do people have a shared responsibility to keep their spaces clean? And that goes not for only for registries, but for ISPs, hosting providers, etc. There should probably be, in my opinion, a real discussion about the goals. If you understand the goals and at least there's some understanding, common understanding of those, then everything else can flow from that. Is one of the goals to have situational awareness of what's happening in your domain space? Personally, I think yes, that's what you need to have. In order to be effective and reduce harm, you have to know what's happening in your domain space on a regular basis, more or less at this time. It is not effective to check it once a month or once a quarter. If you do that, you're going to miss everything pretty much that's going on in the space. So some sort of continual awareness is necessary, I think, in order to meet those goals. Also, sampling, looking at a small slice of the domain space, isn't going to be terribly effective. You'll miss a lot that's going on there. I mentioned threat profile earlier. This is basically an understanding of what the domain space might be liable or tend to have in it. Open TLDs, I think we can all agree, would generally be more vulnerable because anyone can come in and cause a problem, register domains in it. A brand or a highly managed TLD that has a membership requirement, for example, may be less vulnerable to those kinds of problems. Abuse, however, is something that a registry operator doesn't have a lot of control over sometimes because that's something that's coming from outside in. Again, not all TLDs are the same. And also threats change over time. And by that I mean you may have a criminal entity come in and get domains that they weren't interested in before. They were not in your TLD before. That kind of thing. So one thing to think about is what is reliable or credible threat intelligence? every registry operator is required to have an abuse point of contact where people can write into them and report stuff. The problem with an abuse address like that is that a lot of the stuff that comes into it may not be actionable. People oftentimes don't know how to report something in a way that you can follow up on it, understand what happened, and verify it. Also, if you're relying simply on reports from the outside, you will miss most of what's happening in your space. That alone is not sufficient to understand what's going on. And we've seen that over the years in a variety of TLDs. Then there's also the question of what's a reasonable response. If I've got information, what should I do with it? And this is an open question. The language in the contract doesn't say you must take this information and then do something specific with it. That is left up to the registry operators. And in general, I think that's a good principle because you do have to make informed decisions about the information that you have. And there are different decisions that you should make depending upon the given situation. I'll also say that 100% detection or mitigation is not a good goal. It's just not achievable. It's impossible to know everything that's happening in a domain space at any given time. It's a very dynamic environment. Detection methods are not going to be completely effective 100% of the time. And there are some times when you don't necessarily want to mitigate something or don't need to mitigate something. Personally, when I'm looking at a domain space, I worry about these clusters of problems or abuse at scale, where somebody's coming in and registering hundreds or thousands of domain names. That's much more important to address rather than onesie, twosie, little phishing attacks. They're all bad, but you have to think about where the biggest problems lie because you can prioritize those. And if you prioritize that work, you can probably do more good. So the final thing is, just because you're aware doesn't mean we're going to see effective action. Registry operator might have some good data, but they're going to have to decide what to do with it, and sometimes they'll decide to do something, and sometimes they won't. So there's awareness, and then there's execution, and enforcement of the policy may or may not happen. And this, again, when you get down to it, this is a hard thing to deal with, and it's a hard thing for a compliance department to deal with. So what are the options for technical evaluation? Well, there are many, but one thing you can do is you can divide it and say, I can either get information from outside or I can source my own information inside my organization. Now, externally, there is a lot of information out there potentially that people can take advantage of. There are domain name block lists and IP block lists. And these are created by security companies who are very good at what they do. Entities like Spamhaus, Serbal, security companies that are looking for malware and protecting people from malware like Symantec, McAfee, and so on. There are companies that do various kinds of scanning. An example is the XXX TLD. They signed a contract with McAfee when they launched, and McAfee actually scans all the websites in the TLD on occasion. So that's the kind of external stuff that's out there. A lot of people don't know how to find that data. Some of it has to be licensed. Some of it's free. Some people don't know how to bring it in and normalize it and understand what it means. These are often done in dynamic feeds. So it's sometimes hard to find it, find out what's relevant to your TLD, and then figure out what the heck this massive data actually means and what you should act on and so on. So those are some of the challenges. You can also generate threat data internally if you're a registry operator. For example, you can find out some interesting things about malware and botnets if you analyze your DNS data. You see what domains people are querying out there on the internet as you serve the DNS. Now, I haven't talked with Google, so I have no idea what they're doing, but I can imagine Google internally having lots of data that it could use to manage its TLDs. For example, Google runs its Safe Browsing program where it shows data in its search results about domains and will warn you if there's malware on them, for example. They also have phishing data that they use in their Chrome browser to warn people about phishing sites. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I can see an entity that has a lot of data being able to use it in their registries. I do have to say that internally sourced information is very difficult to do. There are only a few entities in the domain space that have the resources, the intelligence, and the wherewithal to actually source credible data. I could probably name them on one hand. It's just very difficult to do. And there might be some other ways. Part of this discussion is, I hope, about people talking about all the different ways you could put information together to manage your space. Let's look at the browser. I'll show you. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to show you one example, which is something I put together. Okay. So this is a tool that brings in some data from several different sources, block list providers primarily, and shows an operator what's going on in their space. So as an example, we're looking at .NET, and this shows us how many domains are block listed, 174,000. 142 seem to be active in the DNS right now, 142,000. 2,400 have come onto the block lists in the last 24 hours. And we've got some specialized sources that specialize in different types of abuse. So Internet Identity, for example, is an anti-phishing company that provides data to various kinds of customers, such as banks, and they've got a feed for phishing. We've got sources that are looking through billions of spams a day, and they're seeing what kinds of sites are being advertised. So this is kind of an aggregation approach that uses trusted data. And then we'll show where the problem spots are, brings in who is information, that kind of thing. So this is one approach among many. So what has to happen now is there's going to be a conversation in the community about what is going to work or what works to an acceptable level. And these are very difficult conversations. So if you're interested in this, this conversation is starting. We do not know if down the line it's going to lead to any further guidelines. We do not know if down the line the contracts might be changed to come up with something that is a little more understandable or more useful to people. But I would encourage you, if you're interested in this issue, to track the issue. The ICANN staff at some point, I think, is going to give some input mechanisms. We'll see what happens. But this is a conversation about the safety of the space. This is a conversation about obligations. This is about compliance. And it's about kind of what kind of an internet we want to have. So that's kind of what's happening right now. We'll find out a little bit more, I think, in the future about the participation options that might be available through the community. So, are there any questions? Mark? Please do.
Thank you. So one of the basic disconnects, except for the extremely thick registrars like GoDaddy who host their own content, is that, as Michele pointed out, that the registrar can't actually look at the hosted content half the time. You know, it's filtered based on one-time use tokens sent with the fish or only the right browser that's exploitable or IP addresses of the suckers or whatever. can actually look at the malicious content. So a lot of registrars, it seems to me, end up with complaints that they simply can't verify. I mean, by design, the architecture's broken so that it's impossible for registrars to verify these complaints with a sophisticated attacker.
I disagree.
Really?
I'll just speak from my experience, which is the highly sophisticated hiding of information via IP address or geolocation does not happen a lot.
Because it doesn't have to?
It doesn't have to. I mean, when I want to go look at a fish, I can usually see it, and I don't have to proxy in from somewhere else to see it. Same thing with the malware. I don't know if those concerns are overblown. The problem, though, is when you're giving information to a registrar, you need to give them good information to rely on. If you're going to make a complaint to a registrar, you have to substantiate it because you're asking them to look at a problem, and a lot of people don't know how to do that very well, right? A registrar may have to make a decision about whether they want to suspend a domain name or not, and they don't want to do that willy-nilly. That's bad business, and they don't want to shut down an innocent registrant.
Well, and then there are malicious complaints just for the purpose of shutting down domains, which happen a small percentage of the time, but enough so that registrars seem unwilling, based on screenshots, unverifiable cases, to shut down a domain.
Oh, you know, this is a standard problem where, you know, sometimes a registrar will take action, sometimes they won't. Some are more willing and some are less willing, certainly.
Don Blumenthal again. I used to manage the anti-abuse program for a fairly well-known registry. And as part of that, I was involved in a project, and I was scrambling to find it. But one of the basic elements, just concerning registry obligations, is what's going to be required through Specification 11 of the PICS. That sets out at a high level some obligations on registries to at least look at abuse. It's very much undefined. So I'm just pointing it out because, and again, I couldn't find it exactly where it is on the schedule, but you all might want to look. There is going to be an open meeting during this ICANN where issues under Specification 11 will be discussed. I don't know if there's anybody here who knows exactly when that is right off. Hmm. No, this is a contractual meeting. Okay, I will try to figure it out before the session ends.
Hi, it's Stephanie Perrin, NCSG. And I'm just wondering, with all of these commitments, what your procedural safeguards are to guard against anti-competitive behavior, particularly in the trusted blocked lists. How is that enforced, and what's the appeal mechanism?
So, like, can you explain what you mean by anti-competitive behavior?
Well, there's a number of companies that are coming up with trusted blocked sites and lists, and I'm not suggesting for a moment that they're not doing, you know, yeoman service there, keeping us all safe from malware. But if they decided to block a competitor's material, how are you going to manage that procedurally? And what responsibility, indeed, and this is not a philosophical question, it's a legal question, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm asking it in all innocence. What responsibility does ICANN, as a monopoly service provider for domain names, have to ensure, indeed, that they're not taking down and not delegating that responsibility to the registrars to act in an anti-competitive manner?
Mm-hmm. In my experience, well, a block list is used by enterprises, universities, and so forth to keep their users from seeing certain things. For example, to filter out spam so it doesn't end up in your inbox, or to prevent people from going to a phishing site without being warned first. So block list providers are sending that information out to enterprises who are using that in their networks. it's virtually unknown for them to try to block their competitors because that is terribly bad business for them. The blocklist providers survive by being trusted and not monkeying with each other in various ways, right? So they also have whitelists to make sure that they're not blocking legitimate companies and so forth. So that particular case you mentioned, I can't point to an example of it ever having happened. Now, your second part of the question is a really big one about whether ICANN has the ability to make certain things happen. And I don't know how to comment on it, but yes, there are limits to its power. The question is sometimes where that limit is.
Well, and if I could have a follow-up question, I guess what I'm wondering, I mean, it's one environment now, and it's a rapidly evolving environment. We're heading to the Internet of Things. I'm trying to imagine what kind of consumer protection safeguarding you're going to have to come up with, or someone is going to have to come up with, to manage self-propelled cars and talking fridges and, you know, the switch that squeals all within my home, right? Is that responsibility going to fall on ICANN to pass on to the registries?
Well, if it's using the one way to look at it is it using the DNS and is it using domain names? Well, cars and phones and a lot of other things and refrigerators now have IP addresses, but there's an issue of whether that's, you know, things that are happening via an IP address or ICANN's issue, really. Really, I think the more the focus is on domain names. And we don't give domain names to appliances, for example.
Okay, there was a question from NCA, Will? No? Okay. Okay, Bobby.
I just had a question for you, Greg, because ICANN Security came out with a paper on this, considering the security safeguards.
Right.
So we want to be appropriate in how we answer them. And one of the, I guess, the big questions that we're having that we want to wrestle with is to make sure that we're not overly prescriptive in tying the hands of registries, but just allowing for there to be good space. Mm-hmm. And ensuring that the registries are doing some type of due diligence to clear out the malware, the botnets, or the phishing, or anything like that. So I saw in your slides you had, you know, to check with some lists, some of the, you know, the block lists or the security lists, or you also mentioned .XXX. So I guess my question, I don't know if it's a question or comment, but how do we... what is the best message that we can give when we talk to the GAC and the NGPC and how we do this to get to a clean space? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I'm sorry, I rambled a little bit, so I apologize.
Well, I think one of the first things is go back to the original goal. The language in the contract doesn't state what the goal is. It's kind of a follow-on, right? The goal that we need to talk about first is, do we have a responsibility for registry operators to be aware of their spaces in order to make something happen? That's the key question. If that question is answered, then you can craft a solution or guidelines or whatever you want to do. But I think the original goal got lost. It needs to be resurfaced.
So say the goal is yes.
Yeah, so if the goal is yes, then the question becomes, should we craft something that's more specific than what we have now? Because what is in the contract now was created during a very busy time, and do we need to have something different? Or is this something that's even enforceable right now? So... and as I said, there are many different ways to achieve that goal. Block lists are one way to do it. Scanning is another way to do it, and so forth. But how do you decide whether we're meeting our goal of having a safer space I think that's what everybody would want, I would hope. But this, are we ever going to achieve it? So how do we get there?
I think the big thing for us and you know, working with the registrars in the past, and we had a session, for instance, was the who is and the validation, and they're saying it was too draconian, it's causing too much hardship. So we don't want that to impede what we do with registries and what we do here. So we don't want to be overly prescriptive, but we do have an objective, which is to have clean space, which I think is in line with all the other public security, you know, agencies, but also the operational security people and abuse people within registries, registrars, and the whole community.
Right. So as far as who is accuracy, there are some very specific requirements in the RAA about how you achieve that. And now that it's in practice, we're finding out what some of the bumps in the road are, right? If you want to put something in a contract, the problem is a contract is written so it can be enforced, right? If you're not going to enforce it or even think about enforcing it, why is it even in the contract? So we've got a problem of we have an idea. We've got some language which is very vague. In some cases, that's a good thing because there are ways that registry operators can do things. They can figure out their own solutions. But what's a standard that ultimately we can use to measure ourselves against? And we don't have that right now. So it's pretty difficult, but at least the discussion's taking place.
Okay.
Anything else? Thank you, Kimo.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you again. Thank you very much. So we have one more topic. So ALAC visited us, and I think they are still here, so we can continue that discussion.
Good afternoon, everyone. Ron Andruff again to refresh your memories. I commend all of you for the amount of detail and the work that you've gone through. I've been sitting in the room in the last period and amazed at how much you're taking in, and I'm really quite impressed. So I almost want to say everybody should stand up and stretch, but I know we're getting late in the day. So I'm just back for this redux because there were a few questions that got asked this morning, but we had that hard stop. So I really don't have too much more to report in terms of report, but I'm happy to respond to any questions with regard to the public interest commitment specifications and what we're trying to achieve with the cross-community group. Actually, earlier, Lorene came to me, and she said she was very grateful to hear that there were others working on this, and I guess I would just underscore that point, that it's not just the BC, it's not just the ALAC, but also the IPC constituency are looking at this more closely. They have a strong interest. The non-commercial users constituency also are interested, but they're trying to figure out how they want to respond. And the NCSG, which is the non-commercial stakeholder group, have told me that they're going to come back with a response. So there is a lot of interest across the entire community, not just in two or three constituencies. So with that, any questions or comments, I'm happy to respond. Well, if you're all good, that's fine. And if you'll see, I just would like to add that with that happy comment, thanks, Dick, let me off the hook. I would just say that obviously we're all here and we're working for a week, and so, you know, you see me in the halls or you see me in the bar or late at night, don't hesitate to come over and talk to me. I'm very happy to speak with you. And if you would like introductions to some of the other groups that I've mentioned, just to get, you know, more insight from their sides, happy to make those introductions. All right, then. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
With pleasure.
Okay, that concludes the day almost. I think, Adrian, you wanted to say something before we finalize it.
Yeah.
caustic.
Yeah, obviously, for those who are here when I was presenting my report, you might have noticed that I dropped when I was presenting. So I wanted to apologize for that. And I have a written speech on this report that those who would like to see can get. I can send them by email. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adrian. So,
just real brief, the program I was talking about, 12 to 1 on Wednesday in the Indiana room, except it's not on the schedule, so I'm not sure what's going on. I wasn't insane, but it might not be there after all. So I'll try to follow up and see if there's a way to get a message out.
Okay, thanks, Don. I think Adrian is happy to brief you about that discussion we had. So that really concludes today. Thank you for your participation, and I hope to see as many as possible you in Buenos Aires or next ICANN meetings. So thank you, and some of those law enforcement agencies, public safety agencies, please stay in this room, and we can agree where we are going to have the beer. So thank you.
Tell you one of the things we're hearing from a lot of the German registrars and stuff like that.